This is Pure Decking show number 369 for Thursday, October something, for, what is it, 2019. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and I'll be under my desk, rocking back and forth, pinching my nose to keep my brain from leaking out, while the developers are talking about application experience journeys, riding forward in time after injecting the marijuanas on their crystal dolphins. I'm Morps. And tonight, I have Madman. What's up, Madman?
Nothing much. Doesn't everything magically journey to its application when you double-click on it?
Sure.
That's Why the not? Way the interwebs works, isn't it?
Yep.
Magical that's... little fairies take packets to wherever the hell it needs to go and bring me shit.
And, you know, there's a demon inside of your monitor with a, you know, paintbrush, and he always runs out of pink paint for some reason. And... Aryu is here.
I do know if you beat the monitor enough, magic smoke leaks out.
That's why I keep my healing crystals on hand, Madman. My gooey experiences.
It's called computer science, not computer alchemy, but I'll just leave that where it is.
Bigot!
Yep.
I don't think bigot applies there. Well, can it? I don't know. I mean, I'll consult the crystals and get back to you.
Somebody will figure out a way to yell racist at me anyways, right? So, Tigger Trigger. So, in the IRC tonight, we've got myself, Sardonyx, Psychros, DPView, Tigger, although I think it was Trigger a minute ago, and, you know, Chairman Meow. But anyways, or Xi Jinping. That's Winnie the Pooh there, yeah. So, anyways... The demons aren't in the monitor. They're in user S-bin. Oh, okay, fair point. Haha. Good, it's a good joke. Better joke than most, at least as far as Linux jokes go. But anyways... I'm... Yeah, 45-minute call listening to them talk about imagining the possibilities of a application experience journey... I really was under the desk trying to keep my brain from bleeding out of my nose.
As someone who watched over 2 hours of the DNC debates, dude, I'm right with you there, buddy.
Oh my God.
Mine was optional. Yours is mandatory.
It's an application, web application, with a database and an API. We don't need to give it woo-woo crystal names.
But if it doesn't sound like work, it's not work. Come on, man.
Sure, whatever. Why not? Let's see, indeed.com. Anyways, I guess we'll get started with the actual news stories. And drag that joke out for only so long. But, yeah, somebody's having fun in the IRC there. Winnie the Pooh, China number one. He's got a big foam finger number one on. Yeah. Actually, I like the one where they photoshopped Xi Jinping on Jabba the Hutt, and it had LeBron James as the little Guido alien dude. That was a pretty good one. But yeah, I threw out the Blizzard stories too, but apparently they're banning more people for supporting Hong Kong. So yeah, just... Anyways, so the first article I have for tonight, and kind of the one I thought we'd have some fun with here, it's from Gizmodo, but I think it's been posted a couple of different places, and that is a huge child porn ring has been busted as authorities cite the ability to crack Bitcoin privacy. So I want to see how they explain this, because I don't think they've actually cracked anything. I think they've just come up with a way of associating Bitcoin accounts with some users, or Bitcoin wallets, I should say, not accounts. Federal authorities in the U.S. have unsealed charges against the South Korean operator of a child porn ring that's been billed as the world's largest dark web child porn marketplace. The child porn site, known as Welcome to Video. It's creepy in the way that that's probably a bad translation, but at the same time, I could totally see it actually being called that. Charged some users in Bitcoin, and authorities say they successfully unmasked those Bitcoin transactions in order to catch the perpetrators. An additional 337 people from around the world have been charged in relation to the Tor-based site. Yeah, so it's what I thought. They didn't actually crack Bitcoin. They just found a way to associate these wallets with actual users. Because it's a common misconception. Everybody thinks Bitcoin's this big privacy thing. It's really not. Every Bitcoin transaction is logged in the blockchain. You can look them up. There's tons of different websites that do it. What gives Bitcoin its anonymity is that there's supposedly no reference linking a wallet to an individual user, at least within the system itself. But there are tons of other ways to do attribution. I saw somebody deposit cash into this wallet from this credit card, maybe multiple times, and that wallet's not listed as a donation page on some website somewhere, so it's probably that person charging up their wallet so they can use Bitcoin. Or we've seen, this wallet initiate transactions from an IP address, because if this is one of the child porn sites they took over to,
That's my hypothesis, man.
Well, I mean, if they shut the thing down, right, they could have easily taken it over and ran it for a bit or just read the
records. I remember one of the first articles we ever did on this way back, they actually stated they were keeping it open as a trap. But it was pretty much the article was written up to pretty much beware what you're doing in Tor. And then they said it was up, and then a year later, I think we did another story. They busted people going there. And then it's just been every year. There's been a big story like this of the number one child porn website busts all these dudes and chicks.
If you're looking at child porn on the internet, seek help. Seriously.
Oh, yes. Seek help with a 45.
In whatever form that help is.
Mm-hmm.
But
in Minecraft?
Whatever. Just
no, fuck it. Yeah, they burn in hell as far as I'm concerned. All I'm saying is that I'm just thinking it's the same fucking honeypot.
Well, I mean,
if it keeps working, why not?
Cut their head off with a shovel. I don't care, but,
test them? Use them for flight test technology?
Send them to China for organs and meat? I mean, whatever. But
why can't we use them for our own people?
We don't have the
organs of a child molester. I don't think I'd rather die than have the organs of a child molester.
We've given you the heart of a child rapist. Yeah, just be out back.
Oh, man.
I'll just be out back with this noose here. Don't mind me.
That got dark.
Thanks, are you?
I was thinking they use the wallet to pay an electric bill or their Netflix subscription.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's...
Like, could be it, too. These people aren't exactly bastions of knowledge, it's like intelligence.
So, Welcome to Video contained over 200,000 videos of child abuse.
Damn.
The fact that many of them exist is kind of depressing.
Yeah.
Not surprising, just depressing. Anyways... Federal authority, where was I? That had users from countries like the US, UK, Germany, Saudi Arabia, Canada, Ireland, Spain, Brazil, and Australia, according to the indictment, which is uploaded by NBC News reporter Cyrus Favier. Users could download videos through a system of credits that could be gained by referring new users or by buying those credits with Bitcoin. Charges in the US against the site operator Zhang Wuson were only unveiled today, but the 23-year-old Korean national was arrested in March of 2018 and is already in bars behind bars in South Korea. The operation was a joint investigation by numerous law enforcement agencies around the globe. So I think you're right. I think they kept running it as a honeypot after they, you know, nabbed this guy. Between June of 2015 and March of 2018, Welcome to Video received Bitcoin transactions totaling over $370,000 in U.S. currency. Undercover agents in Washington, D.C. monitored the site, filled with images of child rape, and were able to de-anonymize the Bitcoin transactions, something the average users often believe is impossible. And again, it's not. It's just you know, every Bitcoin transaction is public, and I'm pretty sure we've talked about this on the show before.
Yeah. You can trace all transactions.
Yeah, so all you have to do is get attribution on a wallet, and you now know every transaction that wallet has done, right? So I don't think that's I think it's just a common misconception. I don't think Bitcoin has ever tried to claim that they're truly an anonymous service. Now, granted, there's nothing to stop you from spinning up a new wallet for every transaction. But, you know, that gets pretty obnoxious, and there are fees for, you know, within the system for moving, you know, money from one wallet to another.
And you're not stopping anyone from finding you. You're just adding a step.
Yeah.
You're still going to be transferring money from one wallet to another.
Yeah.
The way to break it up would be to get it out of the Bitcoin chain and then back into it, like, find some place that would take Bitcoin for a money order or something like that.
Yeah, somehow get a, somehow break it up between multiple networks and make it extreme. But even then, it's still not impossible to trace. You just have to compare multiple monetary systems to try to track them all down. And if they're getting, you know, people in the highest levels of investigation involved, that's not, you know, unfeasible. In fact, I'm pretty sure the FBI has entire divisions that do that.
I'd like to see the forensic accounting of the people they busted.
You'd like to see the what?
The demographics on the people they busted.
Ah.
Age, sex, location, number of times visited, amount of videos downloaded. That should all be released, too.
Yeah. Just how many of them were in their parents' basement, anyways?
That's going to happen at trial.
Let's see.
How many of them are high-powered executives? How many were, you know, police officers? How many were childcare workers?
That one's going to be the scary one. I'm thinking an abnormally large number.
The investigation uncovered at least two former federal law enforcement officials allegedly involved in the child porn site, a 35-year-old U.S. Border Patrol agent from Texas, and a former HSI special agent also from Texas. Darknet sites that profit on the sexual exploitation of children are among the most vile and reprehensible forms of criminal behavior. Assistant Attorney General Brian A. Benswalski said... of the Justice Department's Criminal Division said in a statement published to the DOJ website, in a statement no one disagreed with ever. this administration will not allow child predators to use lawless online spaces as a shield. Today's announcement demonstrates the Department of Justice remains firmly committed to working closely with our partners in South Korea and around the world to rescue child victims and bring justice to the, of these abhorrent crimes. So, on the upside, they didn't need new laws passed to go after darknet stuff. They used the regular existing laws, and they were able to take this guy down and identify some perverts. And you know, that's I think that's one. I think it's great that they shut the site down and they caught the assholes running it, right? But
And I support them taking it over, putting it back up, and running for another 6 months to see what degenerate fucks have come along.
Yeah, I mean,
really, it's the only way to catch him. Like, I'd rather catch him digitally than in meat space. You know what I mean?
Yes, I know what you mean, and I agree with that 100%. But I don't know.
Well, enjoy your incredibly short life, you rock spider bastards.
What do you think, Madman? You've got a different view on some of the, or not different view. That's the wrong way to phrase it. You usually have a interesting take when, especially when it comes to like this kind of stuff. I don't mean the child porn stuff. I mean like the digital search and seizure and stuff like that.
When it comes to this, I don't know how they caught the guys beyond they have the website. And if so long as they got the website legitimately, I don't see a problem with anything else they did, because once you go to a child porn site, you've got probable cause, and if you have to pay to get into the child porn site, that's showing intent. So they're tracking these guys through payments.
Yeah, because I mean, you would assume if you didn't know what that site was because you were just clicking a link or exploring around the tour, and that pops up.
No, Your Honor, I really wanted to see what was behind that paywall, so I set up a Bitcoin account and jumped all the hoops for that.
Well, just I didn't think it was going to be actual. No.
Yeah.
No. Yes, you did.
You fucking lying you bastard.
I would assume most people, I mean, the times I've explored the dark net, when you come across shit you don't like on that, what do? You close the fucking tab. Although some of the hacker forums are pretty interesting.
Then you get incredibly nervous for about half an hour until you realize your fears are exactly what they are, fears. Because you didn't actually do anything wrong.
Oh, no. Then you think, the FBI actually has to call local law enforcement before they come to my house.
I got a couple of days.
This could take some time. Oh, God. I'm not going to know if I'm safe until Tuesday.
So this is where we start talking about setting up burner machines. Yeah, the couple of times I poked around and tore in the darknet, I used a machine I wasn't particularly didn't actually care about. And actually, now that I think about it, didn't have a functioning hard drive at the time. So it's like, yeah, there's no way for anything to be written to this. You poke around a little bit, and then you hit some of these interesting sites that, they're gateways all over them. So it's like you kind of don't see anything, but you kind of suspect what it might be. And it's like, I'm just going to close that tab.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I had my fun with Tor for 48 hours, and then... yeah, got rid of that hard drive and the computer.
Yeah, I haven't touched it in a long time.
I mean, you got me curious in it when we first started talking. Like, you were the one who got me really into it to have a look. Otherwise, I wouldn't have bothered. And it was just to say, like, well, if I could go to the moon, would you? Yeah, you would, even if it's boring as shit. You'd go just to say you've been. That's pretty much what I did with Tor.
Yeah, I used an old netbook. I poked around on it a little bit just to see what it was so I could speak intelligently about it. And it's like, okay, I'm done. There's nothing else here. So...
But that's what I mean. Like, what am I here for? Buying drugs, hiring a hitman, or looking at kiddie porn? That's... Or... And find torture and murder stuff all over the internet without actually having to go.
I found some interesting, forums on there where they were talking about different kinds of carding and some other security stuff, and that was interesting to read through. But even those, you couldn't get very far without setting up an account, getting into them, and all the other shit. And I didn't want to bother. So again, yeah, a lot of these sites you'd hit if they were paywalled off, you just didn't touch it. It's just like nope, don't want to do that.
Well, here's a free dump of stolen credit cards. Feel free to try them.
Yeah, sure.
About that.
It's like, yeah, they're there. But and for the record, for anybody curious, I was Google dorking Pastebin for things that had .onion in them. So, yes, we did hit some websites where we then closed the tab. But most of them were not that. They were just, gross. It's like, I think that's a dismembered horse. I'm done.
Yeah, that stuff's pretty freaky. Yeah.
So, but that was the end of that. So, I don't think it's a bad idea to understand the technology, play around with it a little bit, but at least, I there's probably hidden communities all over it that are, using it in a serious manner. If you don't have a reason to be there, there's no reason to go there. And then you have shit like these kiddie porn sites where, law enforcement are running traps all the time. So, it doesn't matter what I say on this show, the people who want to see that shit are going to go there to try to see that shit. And I hope law enforcement busts them. So
yep. And then I hope you meet a really, really nice guy named, you know, Tyrone in prison, who then takes your virginity.
I was watching some more of those like after prison YouTube videos.
Yeah, that was great.
There are apparently gangs that will require you to provide them your paperwork for what you were busted for.
Yeah.
And if you don't, they're going to kill you because they're assuming you're not telling them for a reason. But yep. They're making sure. But what they're doing is they're making sure you're not in there for hurting kids or something like that.
They're vetting you for either being a pedophile or law enforcement.
Yeah, pretty much. So
if you're either one of those, you're going to have a bad fucking day, because then they'll generally have the youngest gang member stab you to death.
Well, apparently the only other option that the pedos get is to spend their entire sentence in solitary so they don't get shanked by the rest of the prison. And it's like, you know, although...
Either way, I'm happy.
You think about it, you're in a building of nothing but, you know, the worst of the worst of society. And the worst thing you can do to somebody is put them by themselves. We're weird. Humans are fucking weird. Anyways.
Yeah.
I was trying to get away from the dark, really dark place we started that one at. So if anybody's wondering why,
dude,
I'm kind of steering
about
into the silly.
Fucking child pornography. It doesn't get much darker than that.
That's why I'm trying to steer more towards the silly, like, you know, mm-hmm. prison shankings. Because it's a lighter topic.
Male on male rape.
I'm thinking possibly next story.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just wish these things didn't come up so damned often. Because there's a lot of stories I decide I don't want to talk about in decking because it always gets awkward like that.
Yeah, we'll revisit this story in 6 months.
So
when they got the next batch.
So what?
When they get the next batch of child molesters.
Yeah. So
next, you remember, To Catch a Predator went for 5 seasons.
So the next article, this one's from the Independent, Dakota, UK. The UK's porn block, the government plans to drop, or the government's dropping the plans to try to do a mandated porn block. So, man, this site is covered in video and pop-up shit. Anyways, controversial plans for a porn block to stop children viewing adult material online have been dropped, the government has announced. The long-delayed measure, first promised in 2015 and first due to come into effect last year, will not be commencing after running into trouble after reported delays. The government's commitment to protecting children online is unwavering, Nikki Morgan, the digital secretary, insisted in a statement revealing the climb down. The policy would have required all adult internet users wanting to watch legal pornography to prove they are over 18 by providing some form of identification. Websites that refused to implement the checks faced being blocked by UK internet service providers or having their access to payment services withdrawn. However, the idea, one of the first of its kind in any democratic country, ran into legal, practical, and technical difficulties. Privacy campaigns protested that despite age verification sites, it would be possible to connect individuals' browsing habits to their identity, which could then be leaked. The government was also forced to exempt large social media sites from the ban over fears it would result in the likes of Twitter and Reddit being blocked for adult content. In June, implementation was delayed a further 6 months because the government failed to inform the EU of its proposals. Labour attacked that announcement as proof of an important policy issue that has descended into utter shambles. At the time, then-Culture Secretary Jeremy Wright insisted the holdup did not mean the government was backing down from its policy. It's not a change in policy. Age verification needs to happen, and in the interest of the needs of children, it must, MPs were told. But in a written statement, Ms. Morgan, his successor, said the government has concluded that this objective of coherence will be best achieved through wider online harms proposals. As a consequence, we will not be commencing Part 3 of the Digital Economy Act 2017 concerning age verification for online pornography. The Digital Economy Act objectives will therefore be delivered through our proposed online harms regulatory regime. This course of action will give the regulator discretion on the most effective means for companies to meet their duty of care. So they didn't change the law. They're just changing the government mandated age verification database.
I don't know what the fucking UK is doing to itself right now, but it seems to be just hurting itself at every turn.
Well, considering their government's all wrapped up in Brexit stuff right now anyways, I'm kind of surprised they're trying to touch anything else.
So they're still going forward with you need to verify age. They're just changing who's doing the verification.
Pretty much. Ms. Morgan also backed the principle of age verification tools, adding, we expect them to continue to play a key role in protecting children online. So basically, they're going to start proposing new regulations and requirements instead of doing this big database.
I got a little bit of a this noodle scratchy here. Want to protect the kids online, can't protect the kids in their own fucking suburbs. You know, the Rotterdam rape. Yeah, how many are we up to now?
It's been a few dozen.
Yeah, that's
groups.
Groups of there's thousands of children that have been raped. Yeah, so how about get out of the digital world, back into the physical space, and stop this shit from happening? Just saying.
Because maybe it's possible that government can't actually prevent very many things. Sure, they can punish people after the fact.
Bullshit, right?
Anyways.
That means they're still going to try for the FAP tax. You have to pay someone to beat off.
Hmm?
Well, given what we were talking about before the show.
Oh, God, it's behind a paywall. Oh. I see what you did there.
Next article? Hmm? All right, next article. This one's actually from Hackaday. Worn out eMMC chips are crippling older Teslas. It's a memory chip. It should probably go without saying that the main reason most people buy an electric vehicle is because they want to reduce or eliminate their usage of gasoline. Even if you aren't terribly concerned about your ecological footprint, the fact of the matter is that electricity prices are so low in many places that an electric vehicle is cheaper to operate than one that burns gas at $2.50 plus a gallon in the U.S. Another advantage, at least in theory, is reduced overall maintenance cost. While a modern electric vehicle will, of course, be packed with some sensors and complex onboard computer systems, the same could be said of nearly any internal combustion engine car that rolled off the lot in the last decade as well. But mechanically, there's a lot less that can go wrong with an electric vehicle. For the owner of the electric car, the days of oil changes, fouled spark plugs, and the looming threat of a blown head gasket are on the rearview mirror. Unfortunately, it seems the rise of high-tech electric vehicles is also ushering in a new era of unexpected failures and mechanical woes. Case in point.
Oh, they'd be electrical woes, yeah, not mechanical woes. Because that's their claim. They're like, well, you don't get any mechanical issues. No, but you get electrical ones, and it's easier to diagnose a mechanical issue than an electrical issue. So you can fuck right off with that one, electric car retards.
Case in point, some owners of older model Teslas are finding they're at risk of being stranded on the side of the road by a failure most of us would likely associate with losing some documents or photos, a disk read error. And yes, Rats, you are correct. An EMM error, that error is not specific to Teslas. Because, yeah, sure, we've all gotten bad RAM or a bad SSD. This is in a crucial component of these cars that I don't believe is cheap to replace. I haven't actually seen a price on it. Much like rockets and spacecraft of sister company SpaceX, Tesla's vehicles are powered by Linux running what's essentially an off-the-shelf computer hardware. Until 2018, the Model S and X were running the open-source operating system on an NVIDIA Tegra 3, at which point they switched to the media control unit over to a Intel Atom solution. Actually, it's kind of funny. The picture they've got there of the Tegra module kind of looks like an atomic pie, if anybody has seen those. In either event, the Linux system is stored on an embedded multimedia controller, or an eMMC flash chip, instead of a rootable storage device as you might expect. Now, under normal circumstances, this wouldn't be an issue. There are literally billions of computer devices running Linux from an eMMC chip. But any competent embedded Linux developer would take the steps necessary to make sure the operating system's various log files are not being written to a non-replaceable storage device soldered to the board. Oh, they're burning out the flash with the swap and the logs. This used to be an issue back in the day with like netbooks when you would try to run them off flash drives or SD cards before you could go in, you know, before they figured out how to set up Linux to do that. That little triple EPC I had used to run from SD cards because the internal disk was kind of crap. And yeah, I killed several SD cards back in the day before I figured out how to, you know, move the swap into a RAM disk and a few other things like that. So, although swapping your RAM disk is kind of funny because it defeats the point, but anyways, that's what you did at one point. I think they've got better solutions now. Unfortunately, for reasons that still remain somewhat unclear, the build of Linux running on the MCUs is doing exactly that. What's worse, Tesla's graphical interface appears to be generating its own additional log messages. Despite the likelihood that nobody will ever actually read them, for every second a Tesla is driving down the road, more lines are being added to the log files. Now it appears that the near-continuous writing of data to the eMMC chips on the older Tegra-based MCUs has finally started to take its toll. Owners on Tesla forums are reporting that their MCUs are crashing and leaving the expensive vehicles in limp home mode, which allows the car to remain drivable but unable to charge. The prescribed fix for the issue by Tesla is a complete MCU replacement at the cost of several thousand... Okay, there's the cost. That's why I couldn't find it. I was looking for numbers, but they've got it written out. Is a complete MCU replacement at the cost of several thousand dollars. As this failure will almost certainly happen after the factory warranty has lapsed, the owner will then have to foot the bill themselves.
Wow. There's no difference to having a, you know, your head redone.
Oh, sure.
If you're not doing it yourself, but I mean, a head grinding costs, you know, anywhere from $250 to $1,000, depending on how bad it is.
Well, generally, this is where you would want to put like a modern SSD or even a spinning disk. Well, maybe not in a vehicle. Well, yeah, you could still do it in a vehicle. You could put a spinning disk in there, something that's going to take these kind of writes without being a problem.
When you're looking at a head grind, though, are you not looking at, you know, race cars, which, you know, abuse the fuck out of an engine? How many normal people do you know that have needed to have the heads reground on their car?
So I'm taking that was an insult that I'm not normal. Fuck you too, madman. No, I'm kidding.
Wow. That escalated quickly.
I never actually thought about it like that.
Because I've had cars, and I have a belief of I pay cash for my cars. Yeah. So when I was younger and poorer, my first car was an 83 Reliant. Never had the head bone on it. I had to replace the head gasket because it started to leak, but the heads were fine.
Yeah, you weren't adding nitrous oxide to 1.5 liter four cylinders.
So no,
you didn't
I
have many problems.
That's why I had to throw in normal people, because race car, you might have to do this because you're abusing the fuck out of that engine.
Yeah.
People driving to and from work, going home, occasionally speeding, doing like 150 every so often, they're not replacing the heads on their cars.
Yeah, they're not balancing their engine and shit like that. So, I hear what you're saying.
But before you get to we're having a multi-$1,000 repair, you're also looking at a decades-old car when your transmission finally dies.
Yeah.
Because you didn't do tranny maintenance that no one thinks to do. Now, if you even do tranny maintenance, you may get into multi-decades-old car before your repairs are multi-$1,000.
I mean, tranny maintenance now to tranny maintenance back then are two different fucking things, man.
Well, I'm talking about transmission, not trannies. We're in a technical show here.
I know, man. It's low-hanging fruit.
So whenever Tesla's saying this car, which, when was the first Tesla? When did it first come out?
No, this is these are pre-2008 S and X's, I think, are what they said.
Well, still pre-2008, you're talking 2018, 8 years old?
2018, hang on. Let me find it. Yeah. Most, for now, owners of pre-2018 Model S and X vehicles don't seem to have many options, so that's what it is. Model S and X pre-2018.
Pre-2018, so a car 2 years old, or a year old.
Yeah.
Or slightly older. When internal combustion engine cars, you're talking 10, 15 years.
Yeah. I mean, especially not being covered under warranty. And you know what? That is a major malfunction due to manufacturing. So therefore, under your consumer protection, you should be able to have that replaced for free.
You think that would fall under a lemon?
Yeah. Because they know it's they know there's a pre-existing issue to order a recall. Now, they're saying it's not a safety issue. I'm pretty sure the automotive industry of America could find that a safety issue.
Yeah, the idea of electric cars being new, they raced the Model T to see what we're going to go with, electric or gas cars. There were electric taxis in New York before there were gas taxis in New York. They used to have charging stations for them.
Well, that was, yeah, that's back before they figured out gasoline was a decent fuel and electricity was crazy expensive at the time. No, they had figured out gasoline by then. You're right. But electricity was still way more expensive than it is today.
It's the consumption levels. That's what's consistently fallen over the years with gasoline, is how much you've needed to run the vehicle. But from what I understand from a few guys now who are working on the newer stuff, the gasoline consumption levels are going up because of all the emissions fucking standards they have to
Yeah, they
got to
burn the engine hotter, basically.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
But, yeah, I don't know, man. I just, that's kind of shitty that they've, because the problem is that they're just constantly writing these logs and these EMMCs aren't that big. So it's just rewriting it constantly, which means it's rewriting over the same sections of that chip over and over and over again, which if anybody's done, I mean, with the Raspberry, you see this stuff. If you run this stuff back and, you know, over and over and over again, you kill that part of that flash memory.
I wonder how necessary that is for the car, because rats in the IRC and I are having some of the conversation. We've had electric cars for over 100 years now. This is a computer issue, not an electric car issue.
Do we
need that computing for the car to function?
Probably not. I mean, well, they were talking about a limp home mode. So probably not, but at the same time, the way that thing is designed, without the computer control, the car is probably fairly useless. Like, I'm sure if you, you know, pop the thing open and, you know, hot wired it up, it would work, but you know, it's kind of how they're controlling the whole thing.
I'm pissy they're soldering it all to the board. I want to be able to swap that shit out myself at home.
Well, see, that's what I'm thinking, is it's like that storage should not be on a soldered-on chip. That should be on, actually, if you're wanting reliability, it ought to be on a spinning disk. Because all forms of flash storage have limited rights. On an SSD and flash disk and thumb drives, writing to them is destructive. It's just...
The only thing I can see wrong with a spinning disk is gravity, G-forces, man.
Yeah, but they make laptop discs that survive hits, and you can put accelerometers in them to, you know, spin the disc down and park the heads if it thinks it's going to have a crash. I mean, that's been a thing for years.
Yeah.
They're not the fastest thing in the world, but that's where you split things up, and you're like, okay, the OS is running from this memory module, and then you've got all the logs going to a spinning disc, so when you take it in for service, they can just yank the disc and pull the logs, right?
But, well, that's what I would have thought. You know,
or an SD card? I mean, those are cheap and easy to replace.
Yeah. That way, you know, so you have a problem on the side of the road with it full, you just whack in another one. Or, say, even your phone as a temporary fucking stopgap to take the...
But, yeah, these are getting written to the same storage device as the operating system. So when it doesn't work, all the car can do is just kind of, you know, half-ass it back home, because that's the car requires an operating system to run, which is kind of cool. The car is running Linux, but the car requires an operating system to run.
Oh, so that might be to solve the issue. Have the logs written to a separate SD card, so when it dies, your car still works. You just have no idea what the fuck it's doing.
That's, yes, Madman, yes. That's literally what we just said, but yes. Anyways, so it's yeah, you look at the Raspberry community. That's the thing, though, is if that's all it is, an NVIDIA Tegra, why couldn't I whack a cell phone in there and run the thing off that until I got, you know, could get it serviced? You need their software, but that's a solvable problem.
Yeah, on your cell phone, just download it. Hopefully you were near a cell tower.
Well, yeah. I mean, Tesla knows who they've sold those cars to. They're expensive enough.
In the future, road rage will be done with earth magnets.
Oh, you're erasing the software.
That only really works on spinning disks and floppies, but you know, hey. Anyways, let's see. Next article. Let me find it. Have I thrown the link in already? Yes, I have. This one's from Ars Technica. Researchers find a bug in Python script may have affected hundreds of studies. Whoops. In a paper published on October the 8th, researchers at the University of Hawaii found that a programming error in a set of Python scripts commonly used for computational analysis of chemistry data returned varying results based on which operating system they were run on, throwing doubt on the result of more than 150 published chemistry studies. While trying to analyze the results from an experiment involving cyanobacteria, the researchers Janti Brandari Neptune, Ram Neptune, Yuhing Lau, Wesley Yoshinda, Rui Sun, and Philip Williams, one of these things, and not like the other. And, you know, a bunch of names I can't say, and then a name, and then a dude. Discovered significant variations in results run against the same nuclear magnetic resonance spectroscopy data. The scripts, called the Wilboit Hoy scripts after their authors, Patrick Wilhoby and Thomas Hoyle of University of Minnesota, were found to return correct results on macOS Mavericks and Windows 10, but on macOS Mojave and Ubuntu, the results were off by nearly a full percent. The reason for the variation was the script's use of Python's glob module, which searches for files matching a specific name pattern, and the script generates a list of input files based on the glob results. But the module depends on the operating system for the order in which the files are returned, and the results of the script's calculations are affected by the order in which the files are processed. Rui Sun and Philip Williams wrote the corrected sorting code that fixed the problem, ensuring consistent results. Patrick Wilboro, now an assistant professor of chemistry at Ripon College, acknowledged the researchers' findings, and the correction makes the scripts to the University of Hawaii team in a post on Twitter. So basically, they're like, hey, good job finding it. Williams told the Register that he believes 150 and 160 research projects may have been affected by the bug. While the variations of University of Hawaii team found in data didn't impact the results of their work, it may have had more significant impact on other studies. Williams said he hopes the paper will get scientists to pay more attention to the computational side of experiments in the future. This is why you should have independent verification of scientific findings. Because
this is why we're not going to have a cure for AIDS for another 10 months.
Probably. But that's the thing, though, is that means all of these papers, either you lucked out and the people verifying your research were using the same operating system as you to get the same results, or they just weren't bothering, which, given what we've been hearing about scientific papers recently, I would imagine it's the latter. Because hasn't there been several things out about how a lot of scientific studies aren't repeatable?
Yeah. A lot of modeling studies aren't.
So, I don't know how well that applies to chemistry, but that's pretty crazy that a software bug like that can throw off that many you know, papers, that much research.
Well, once you have software that you think works, how often do you propagate the community?
Especially when you don't check it. Because how often do you break out the calculator and manually check the computer?
Once, and then I assume it's working, and I don't think, man, I just did an update of Windows. I wonder if that effed up everything I've been working on.
Yeah, outside of IT, that kind of thinking almost never happens. And usually in IT, it's just because they've had an update break something before. That's the kind of lesson that's learned, not taught.
Yeah.
So.
Like, for some reason, last time I did this experiment, no rats caught on fire. This time, 5 rats have caught on fire.
Which wouldn't be that strange, except, you know, we didn't let Jeff with the matches near them this time. So,
you didn't see you're testing shampoo, madman. How did this happen?
There may be some problems with the pH.
Lights.
And the everything else. It seems mineral spirits are great for removing things, but not great for leaving on human skin.
We were creating the ultimate pet shampoo. It was called Spot Remover. We have yet to find the dog. Anyways,
Chang.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a bad joke. Anyways, next article?
I don't know. Do you think this is a good example of everyone must be tech literate in the future?
No, I think it's a good example of if you're going to rely on a system for checking and validating your work, you should be competent enough with that system to validate that it's giving you good answers. Because, like, these guys found it, right? So that's obviously a lot of people who didn't. Now, the fact that it was giving correct results on, you know, what was a more up-to-date version of macOS at the time and Windows 10 means that a lot of the people using it probably were getting correct results, so they probably didn't know anything was wrong. But I think it does prove that if you're going to rely on these things, you need to have at least a decent understanding of how they're working. This is actually a gripe I have with a lot of my software devs at work, is that they just want to grab whatever the hell random-ass library they found online that says it'll solve a problem. And it's like, yeah, I want you to, you know, let's go through some validation, maybe get some people to sign off that we're going to use that in our code before we do it. It's like, no, we're just going to use it. No, you're not. And then they get all pissy about why, and you have to look into it and realize that they're just wanting to be able to grab whatever the hell and just use it. It's one of the reasons they're pushing for containers now, is because they want to be able to just grab shit and use it without having it validated that it, you know, works with everything else. So, you know, it's just I don't know, it's lack of, yeah, they just want to trust that everything's going to work without having to validate it.
I wonder how they found it, if somebody was just using the correct OS and someone wasn't, and they just got two different answers when they were checking it.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
If it's off by a percent, you're not going to look at it and eyeball that.
No, that's exactly what it was, is when they were going back and redoing their work, they were getting different results on different machines. Because they pointed out two different versions of Mac OS, so it almost sounds like that they did an update in OS X, and then the results changed, and they're like, wait a minute.
That should not happen.
So, anyways. So I think it's not so much that you need to have, like, intimate knowledge of how Python, you know, libraries work and all that, but if you're going to be relying on them to do that kind of scientific work or development work, you should at least have an understanding of what's going on there and where the failure points could be, and a way of validating that it's correct. And that sucks, because sometimes it's really hard to figure out how to go back and validate some of this stuff. But, you know, I'm in network security, so I'm asked to, you know, prove the results all the fucking time. Because, you know, you ask your fire marshal to burn a building down to prove that, you know, there's a, you know, fire hazard, right? But
yeah, we do it.
Anyways.
Country's backwards.
And that's what it feels right. Like. That's what it feels like at times. It's like, you know, I got to prove every fucking step of every everything. It's like, you know, in other professions, when you've got somebody saying this is a problem, do you make them prove it 10 ways to Sunday? Do you make them actually burn the building down to prove that it's a fire hazard? I mean,
only Fire Marshal Bill does that. But he's also the most trustworthy fire marshal.
Well, this is undisputed. Anyways.
I believe it's a time for the next story.
It's a nice fountain. What if somebody comes along and fills it with gasoline? And then lights a cigarette and throws it in? It was one of Jim Carrey's best roles. Anyways, last article I have for tonight, this is from ZDNet. Tor Snowflake turns your browser into a proxy for users in censored countries. Chrome and Firefox extensions released over the summer, Windows support added this month. The Tor project has published Chrome and Firefox extensions over the summer to help users in censored countries connect to the Tor network. The extensions are not meant to be installed by users living in oppressive countries that block access to the Tor network. They're meant for those living in free countries where the governments don't block Tor. Users who want to help those living under oppressive regimes can install the Tor Snowflake extensions for Chrome or Firefox. The two extensions effectively transform a user's browser into a proxy, allowing users in oppressive countries to connect through the extension and the user's computer to the Tor network. To better understand how Tor Snowflake works, one must first understand the intricacies of the Tor network itself, its current anti-censorship solutions, the bridge system, onion routing, all that stuff. I don't need to explain all that. But, yeah, due to the nature of the IP addresses of TorGuard servers are public, listed on the Tor website, so Tor clients, usually the Tor browser, can read the list and connect to Tor network through a safe server. Over the years, countries have realized they can block access to these servers and effectively block a user from accessing Tor. The Tor project fought back by developing another type of Tor server called the Tor Bridge. These are TorGuard servers that don't have their IP addresses listed publicly. Users in oppressive regimes can configure their Tor browsers to request a Tor Bridge IP address and use this as the entry point to the Tor network. However, Tor bridges aren't a foolproof solution. Oppressive regimes have realized they can also request access to Tor bridges as well, compile a list of IP addresses to block. Tor Snowflake is the Tor project's reaction to governments that have managed to block Tor bridges. Tor Snowflake helps the Tor project create a constantly moving mesh of proxies that no government could ever block. Once users install the Chrome or Firefox extensions, users in countries like Iran or China can connect to regular Tor bridges through users' browsers. The more users install the extension, the more proxies are available. Then they've got how to use it here and Windows support coming soon. So, here's the thing. Yeah, I get what they're doing. It's noble and all that. You should probably not run a Tor proxy, bridge, or exit node from your personal machine, especially on networks that you pay to use. As Rats has pointed out rightly in the IRC, people who run the Tor exit nodes get slammed for child porn all the time. You're saying you're doing this for people in censored countries, but you don't actually know who those people are. It's part of the point of an anonymizing service. So they might not be from a censored country. They might just be some bozo looking to get at the kind of stuff we were talking about in the first article. And you're right, bridges are not exit nodes. They, just bounce you to other nodes, which are exit nodes. So I theoretically, the user running this extension is going to be protected as well. But I would question the safety of running something like this, especially if your personal machine.
Yeah, I'm going to get in trouble for my traffic, not yours.
Sorry. Yeah, it's going to be a no for me, dog. Sorry about your oppressive regime, but I can't trust you.
If you are wanting to run something like this, maybe on like a public Wi-Fi. I think we thought about library computers earlier and stuff like that. Although I think a lot of those already are Tor exit nodes. I don't. If you're running this from your house, it just seems like asking for trouble.
Yeah.
It seems like you're going to get your IP address banned. It seems like you're going to get, you know, ideally you're not going to be a Tor exit node. You're just going to be a bridge, so you shouldn't see any exit traffic actually coming out of your system. But I know, as somebody who runs a network, I wouldn't want people running this shit on my network. Exactly. Because if nothing else, you're just going to slow it down with a whole bunch of Tor traffic.
You're going to let a homeless man use your bathtub? You know, they're only there to bath, and then they'll leave. Really? But what sort of mess they leave in the bathroom in? That's the way I look at it.
So, you know, it's noble. If you want to run one of these things, there are ways to do it. I don't think... If you want to participate in helping to run the Tor proxies and exit nodes and bridges and this plugin, you should do the research. You should understand what you're in for, and you should understand what consequences might be, because you might be held responsible for somebody else's traffic going through there if they're doing something bad. And so I'm not saying you shouldn't run this. I'm saying you should understand what you're participating in.
But also understand, too, that you might have done this as someone else, but you flying to another country, it may be against their laws to help these people. So there are a lot of funky laws now.
So I wouldn't jump on the bandwagon of just running this thinking that you're helping make the internet a better place, because you potentially might not be.
I'm going to go with odds are you're not.
So, anyways. You know,
I was reading a story this morning, man, about a lecturer from, I forget which country she's in, but it's a freedom of speech country, and went to Egypt for a holiday. They arrested her the minute she landed. Because she's got a big internet profile, see?
Yeah.
She said shit that they don't like. Now she's going to prison over there for shit she didn't say over there.
Well, I mean, New Zealand has said they want to extradite people who've said things on social media that they don't like.
Dude, there's no chance I'm ever going to New Zealand.
Like, right?
Fuck that. New Zealand, the UK, and Canada are completely fucking out for me because they have speech laws. I have broken so many speech laws in Canada and the United Kingdom, especially the UK.
Oh,
so that's
I still want to go to the UK, and I know I've broken their speech laws. I'm a loudmouth American.
Yeah.
See, this is why I just would exercise caution if you're going to participate in the Tor network in any way, is do your research and understand what you're getting into, and understand that, you know, while you might be doing this for altruistic reasons, trying to help people in censored countries, that might not be what ends up going through your machine. And you probably don't have really any way of controlling that and saying, well, I only want to help Chinese dissidents or the Hong Kong protesters or, you know, people in Iran who aren't terrorists or something. I don't know. I mean, how do you, there's no good way to do that filter. You know, if you're running this service, you don't know who's using Tor. That's kind of the point. You know, you might not be helping people you think are good people. So it's just, and if you're okay with that and you understand what you're doing and that's what you want to do, then, well, you know, you're not going to listen to me. But just, I would exercise caution, and I will not be running these that plugin personally. And I guess I've beaten that horse to death.
It's glue, Johnny. It's glue.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to this. Okay, only got one thing for you tonight in Digital Dojo, but I thought it was interesting. Yahoo is shutting down the old Yahoo Groups service. So they've got a FAQ page up here. Understand what's changing in Yahoo Groups. Yahoo has made the decision to no longer allow users to upload content to the Yahoo Groups site. Beginning on October the 28th, you will not be able to upload any more content to the site. And as of December the 14th, all previously posted content on the site will be permanently removed. You will have until that date to save anything that you've uploaded. So, basically, the groups are getting converted into glorified mailing lists, essentially. You'll be able to communicate with your group via email and search for private groups on the site. In addition, admins will continue to have limited access to group settings and administration tools. But there's no content. So all the photos, write-ups, documents, I assume mostly fanfics and bad Photoshops and later on meme images. All the files and stuff that's in Yahoo groups, Yahoo's shutting that down.
I think archive.org is going to be busy for the next few days.
Well,
yeah, I think it will be.
That's where we get into Dojo. So there's a group on Reddit and the archive team that have put together a project to try to scrape all the content out of Yahoo groups so they can archive it. They've got a script posted up on a GitHub page for Yahoo groups backup. They've got a wiki page on archiveteam.org and an IRC channel they've set up. So if you want to help archive all those old fanfics and, you know, bad Sonic the Hedgehog Photoshops and whatever the hell else was in Yahoo groups, I'm assuming a lot more relevant content, so that it can eventually get put up at archive team or archive.org. Here's how to participate.
Awesome.
So, and if you go look at the script, it's a Python script. Yahoo groups backup. Yeah, it's all Python. So
you never know what you'll find, kids.
Pretty much you pull it down, you run it. It's got instructions on how to scrape an entire group. So you just figure out the groups you want. And since the archive team has an index up, so if you want to start pulling in groups and helping with that, there you go. Or, you know, if you just want to back up groups for your own personal usage, you can use the script to do that before December the 14th when the thing shuts down. So there you go.
At least they gave people decent notice, man.
That's true. That's better than
give them that.
That's better than what a lot of these sites do, where it's just like, oh, out of money. Never mind.
Yeah. Bye.
So.
Oh. That's going to become more and more common since fewer and fewer things are on your computer.
Oh, yeah.
What happens when Gmail finally goes under? How many people have never deleted an email from Gmail?
Well, that was always the big selling point of that system, was to just never delete your email, have an archive of it. So, I don't know. If you could actually trust that Google would ever delete anything, it would be good to archive out your Gmail and clear it out every once in a while. I know several people are advocating clearing off your Twitter account every once in a while and other social media accounts. Not necessarily just deleting everything, just clearing everything out of them.
Just don't.
Or just don't ever post in the first place. Yeah, that's better advice.
Don't even have one.
So. But anyways, that's all I've got for tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. The Peer Decking is every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site, the subreddit, and the IRC tonight. We have myself, Sardonic, Psychros, DPView, Hellrats. We also had Tigger and Winnie the Pooh in there fighting. With Winnie the Pooh obviously representing the Chinese government. Madman, closing thoughts.
Oh, it's going to be interesting when something like iTunes finally dies. That's going to be a fight.
Well, imagine if something like the Epic Store or Origin, you know, they finally decide to give up the fight and, you know, because, you know, Steam's kicking their butt, or maybe Steam, you know, for some reason goes into shutdown. What happens to all that?
Epic, I think, will just roll over to Steam because Steam was doing Epic Games before Epic decided to split off on their own. Now, when Steam goes down, that'll be interesting.
It'll be one of these things of like when Amiga services started shutting down. Did anybody, you know, there weren't enough people left using it to care, you know? So is it going to be one of these things where enough people have to die off the service that, you know, nobody cares anymore? Or is it going to be, I don't know, because you're right. You know, you have things like Chromebooks and, well, hell, most of your mobile phones that almost everything on them is cloud dependent nowadays. They don't work without an internet connection. And we've already seen this with like early Nest thermostats, where after they got bought by Amazon, they like, no, we want you on the new hardware, so we're shutting down support for the old hardware. And it just stops working because the cloud backend no longer works. So, and this is one of the reasons I advocate understanding how this shit works and building your own. But
yeah. One upside Nest had is I don't think they had enough users to do a stink, but you have an iTunes shutdown. How many millions of users have their entire music library on iTunes?
Well, not only that, iTunes made a big deal out of their cloud service a few years back, to the point that if you activated their cloud service, it would go through, mostly on Macs, it would go through the music collection on Mac and delete the local copies and always stream it from the cloud to save you on disk space, right? And I could imagine that being a massive... Because, like, I've got hard disks and CDs full of all of my music and other things that I've backed up over the years, right? But, you know, if you have the service not only deleting the local copies to force you to stream it, but then shutting down... Now, granted, with iTunes, it's fairly easy to download copies if you go in and force it to do it, but I know it wants to stream everything from the cloud, so I don't know. I imagine that would be a... And of course, you know, Apple makes enough money through cell phones that I doubt they'd ever kill iTunes, at least right away.
Oh, the hope I'm not thinking it's going to be anytime soon. I'm just, that's eventually going to be a thing.
The hope would be that they would give enough notice that you could go in and download everything that's yours and get backups made. And in the case of like a Steam or some other software service, get your unlock keys and back those up somehow. But that's also assuming that people are paying attention and get it done until just one day they log in and all their shit's gone, you know?
Yeah, because it could be a few weeks between me logging into Steam. I could see that being an issue.
Yeah. I mean, especially if you're busy with other shit, right? So.
Yeah.
Yeah, or, sometimes you have to go out into the big blue box.
Or, I mean, and this does happen, where you have shit where it's like, you know, entire companies that live out of Amazon. And we talked about a couple of them on Decking a few years back where their Amazon account got popped and the guys who got into it went in and just deleted everything. And it's like, that company's done. They went out of business because their cloud services were wiped, which means if the service behind them went under, how many people would be out of business overnight? You know, think of Akamai or some of the other big CDNs just to... Cloudflare. Think if Cloudflare shut down overnight. I mean, think of how much shit would be broken. Or if like the government came in and mandated Amazon split their hosting from their you know, mall service, and suddenly, you know, maybe AWS isn't making as much money and starts shutting things down left and right. Lots of major companies are running out of AWS alone. So, you know, maybe it's not the company shutting down. Maybe the government steps in and issues some dumb mandate that, you know, necessitates these services to get shut down or modified. So it's not just a shutdown. It could be any number of things affecting it. I mean, fuck, you could have a natural disaster take out a data center, and now that service is just gone, you know? Ideally, they're geolocated and, you know, multiple copies, but still... It does happen.
Yeah, it'll take a week or two to get back up.
Yeah. So that's a good point.
Oh, a week or two could kill a business. California's having that problem with their rolling shutdowns of power.
Didn't they?
No one decided to tell the restaurants about that.
I thought they fixed that problem back in the 90s. I don't get this.
Yeah, I'd be rioting if I was living in California.
I'd be making a point of not living in California if I was living in California.
That's a good one.
Speaking of not living in California, how are you? Closing thoughts.
If you're looking for a movie to watch this week, check out a movie called Bloodline. It's a little dark, though. I recommend it, but a little dark. That's it for me, man. And IHN will come back when my internet's more fucking stable. Killing me, man. It's absolutely killing me.
We're going to have to go back to IP via carrier pigeon. But yeah, that's all I got. So I guess I'm going to start hitting buttons now.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Time to go nose down and call it a night.
But shut up, Wesley.
This is, of course, a picture of former President Ronald Reagan naturally firing a machine gun while riding on the back of a dinosaur. The stirring, unmistakable patriotism of the Velociraptor holding up a tattered American flag.